And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick.
Morning.
That's him.
What's up, everybody?
Morning.
Morning.
Julian Council behind the glass. Julian and friends. He's got some friends back there.
What are you waving that paper around?
We got a lot of things to get into. Do what?
He's waving around the paper for whatever reason. What are you waving the paper
around for? Well, I just want to make sure. Julian, we had a little problem. You were out last week, and I think we missed you because I got a lot of flack from the panel about the lines for the underdog games.
I was here last Thursday. I was out Friday.
Okay, so you remember what happened.
I do. For whatever reason, there must have been two different papers. For whatever I didn't print out the lines last week. Whatever I was handed.
No, I know. It was when you were Friday. Ryan Porth came in and took the bullet. Yeah, he took the bullet.
That's right. Excellent.
He gave a Tuesday. He went and copied the Tuesday lines.
How does that happen?
But, as we said, who's the commissioner? Who's in charge? You don't get to say as the head coach, hey, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, you can't
who's
pass
in charge?
Buck.
You can't pass the buck.
Can't pass the buck.
You're in charge.
That's on me.
If your people are out, you know, gathering things for you, you better make sure the information is correct.
Yeah, the buck stops here. But I just want to let you
be better than Ohio
today.
Hey,
you guys,
be better than Ohio State, okay? What, is that too soon?
No, fair point. I see that you have a photocopy of some lines, but I do believe that's the correct paper that you have. Because Mark Cuban's mug is on there.
Well, I like the way you said, I believe. So that means you're not sure.
That is Thursday's paper. I printed those out, so I can guarantee you that's Thursday.
Yes. I think we're good.
It does say Thursday, September 20th.
That is today.
We're in good shape. We're off to a good start.
Okay. We are off and roaring on this Thursday. By the way, couple notes here locally to pass along before we get hot and heavy into today's show. We got tons of things to get into. Did you see Yanks Red Sox? One, Price's woes against the Yankees continue. It's unbelievable. They are his kryptonite, without a doubt.
In Yankee Stadium in particular.
Oh.
He's pitched okay against them in Fenway.
He cannot
not
beat them.
At Yankee Stadium.
It just is not good. But did you see who closed out the game for the Yankees?
Was it a kid named Sheffield?
It was.
Yes.
And it wasn't Gary Sheffield.
Related.
Justice.
There is a relation.
What
I believe it's nephew.
He's the nephew of Gary Sheffield?
I believe so.
Justice Sheffield from Tullahoma?
Yes. Former first-round pick of the Indians, who was a Vanderbilt commit and signed with the Indians out of high school, and then was involved in the trade that brought Andrew Miller to the Indians. So that could be interesting if they were to meet in the postseason. I don't know if Justice will play on the postseason roster for the Yankees, but he's a very high-rated prospect. He's taken a while to develop, but he's there. He's one of their top prospects, so congratulations to him. His brother Jordan went to Vanderbilt and was a very good pitcher for Tim Corbin. He's in the minors right now. So a couple of brothers from Tullahoma doing good things.
The reason I bring up the David Price stuff, because if the Yankees and the Red Sox meet in the playoffs and he doesn't beat them, it's just going to be so bad. It's going to be so, so bad.
But you know what's interesting is you follow that narrative from afar. David Price has had a really good year. Since that, if you take the between the Sunday starts, that Sunday night in Yankee Stadium that started this whole thing, and then last night, in between, he's been lights out.
Yeah, in Boston, though, they don't care about that. They won't remember about all those great starts. The last thing they're going to remember is what happened in October.
I think that's true. I think it won't matter what he did against the Yankees in the regular season if he beats whoever in the postseason. It's all going to be about how you do in the postseason. But he's got David Price numbers. He's 15-7, another 200-something innings, a lot of strikeouts, solid ERA. But they've been counting down to the postseason for a long time.
Well, yeah, because they've been in cruise control.
They have dominated. So, games against the Yankees are really somewhat meaningless. They got such a big lead.
Which is scary to say, but yes, true. Speaking of baseball, there'll be a baseball press conference today. The Sounds, I think Mayor Briley, actually on this radio station, is what started that ball rolling. I think when he came on and said, yeah, looks like the A's are going back out west. And he had a meeting with the Nationals. It was very clear that the Sounds were about to change affiliates. And that is going to be made official today. It's already out there. It's not a secret. It's just they're bringing in all the brass from the Texas Rangers, and they'll make it official that moving forward, was it the next, a four-year deal? Rangers. Rangers will be the new affiliate for the Sounds.
I all along was thinking, after that interview we did with Mayor Briley, or the interview, I guess, the morning show did with Mayor Briley.
It was on Morning Drive that started it, yeah.
When he mentioned the Nationals, I thought, well, it's going to be the Nationals.
So did I.
And I was telling everybody out in California, oh, it's going to be the Nationals. Nationals, yeah, look for the Nationals. And to get the, you know, come to find out,
it's the
Rangers.
I thought the same thing as you. Yeah, I thought the same thing as you. I was like, well, there's a reason he said that. There's a reason he's having meetings with them. It's going to be the Nationals. And proximity-wise, that makes sense. There's nothing nothing odd about that.
Well, the thing that shuffled up the deck, and if you look at it, most of the moves make geographic sense. I don't know who actually would start it, but the A's getting to Las Vegas, that geographically makes a lot of sense. The Mets were Las Vegas before. That made no sense. Just like the A's to Nashville is a pretty long way to shuttle a guy from your AAA. So once the A's got Las Vegas, the Mets got Syracuse, and then Houston got to Round Rock, and that displaced Texas because, you know, you're thinking, why would Texas leave Round Rock? Well, because Houston took Round Rock, so that left Texas in need. But, you know, unlike before, where I think Nashville was getting sort of the last one that didn't have one because of the state of Greer Stadium, now I think there are people going, well, we'd love to get to Nashville. Look at that park.
Sure. I mean, I don't think it's very hard to get anybody to sign up for that anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the minute somebody's got an opening, my guess is the first place they're thinking is, hey, what's the situation in Nashville?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Rangers, I'm not a big fan of the Rangers, but they have produced a lot of good talent.
Why aren't you a big fan of the Rangers?
I don't know. I've just never liked the Rangers. I've never had any.
Did you like the A's?
I did. I've always appreciated the A's because.
Moneyball.
The Moneyball.
Moneyball. I knew it.
But I liked it before that too. I loved the uniforms, you know, the Charlie Finley.
But it was because
colorful.
Of
big Jonah Hill fan, Willie.
I read the book long before Darren can tell you.
He wanted to be Jonah Hill. He wanted to be Jonah Hill.
I would have loved to play him.
I'm
gonna
let the cat out of the bag. Willie wanted to be Jonah Hill.
What does he do? He gets on base.
Me, I'm more like Art Howe. I can see with my own eyes. This guy's a bum. Or this guy's good. Yeah, but if
what's
seen
he do?
His,
gets on base.
You seen his on base percentage? I don't care. Can't field. He's not a first baseman. Well, doesn't matter. Put him at first.
I like when Brad Pitt tells the guy Ron Washington is the actual person. I forget the actor's name, but he goes, "We could teach the guy how to play first base, right? It's not that difficult. It's extremely difficult."
Looking forward tonight to seeing a lot of folks at City Winery. That is going to be where we're excited to be a part of this again. Coaches versus Cancer, which is a really, really, really good cause. And that's tonight. And 102.5 The Game is a presenting sponsor. We're very, very excited to be teamed up with the American Cancer Society and the National Basketball Coaches Association. And tonight, Sean Farnham is going to be the MC. Jared and myself will be a part of the festivities as well. And, of course, some great local coaches will be a part of it. Brian Collins. There's going to be two Pennies there, just so you know. Brian Penny Collins, head coach at TSU. And Anthony Hardaway, or should I say Penny Hardaway, who was the coach at Memphis. Bryce Drew, Casey Alexander, Matt Figger, Steve Forbes, Nick McDevitt, Anthony Stewart. So it's going to be a fun night and raise some really, really good money for the American Cancer Society at City Winery tonight. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's a great, great place.
I have been there.
I've only been there for music, you know, for acts, for a concert, but it's a great venue.
It's a great venue, and I've been a part of that event in the past. And what I've always appreciated is the coaches make it a priority to be there. I really like how they do that. The coaches all year long, the initiative, you know, the fight for cancer. You see year to year.
Oh, yeah.
They have the sneakers and stuff like that. It's great what they do to raise money to fight cancer. Fantastic initiative. So that'll be a fun night.
So looking forward to seeing a lot of people there tonight at City Winery. Let's come back with Richard Deitch from The Athletic. We got a lot of things to get into with him. By the way, we were at Centennial Sportsplex yesterday. If you didn't hear it at the very end of the show, I can't think of a better way to end a show than to have P.K. Subban sit down at our table. You'll hear that a little bit later in the program if you missed that on yesterday. A really good conversation with P.K. coming up in the second hour of the show. We'll come back with Richard Deitch next on Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget today to be listening in the 11 o'clock hour. One, we're going to have some great guests and great conversation. But two, your chance to qualify for an awesome trip to Bristol, Connecticut. Visit the ESPN headquarters. The grand prize will include a sit-in on a live taping of Golic and Wingo, customized VIP ESPN headquarters experience, including a tour of the ESPN studios, your airfare, your hotel, all that is going to be taken care of. Next Friday, which is September 28th, if your name is called during the 5 o'clock hour on Jared and the GM, you will have 10 minutes and 25 seconds to call in and win. See what we did there? 10 minutes and 25 seconds. If you don't do that, it's on to the next name. More details at thegamenashville.com. So you have a chance to qualify today. That's the only way you're going to win is to be qualified, is to be listening in the 11 o'clock hour. For your cue to call, there's going to be – Julian is going to play an ESPN personality at some point in the 11 o'clock hour, and then you're going to have to call in and guess. So far this week, it's been Linda Cohn, and yesterday it was Reese Davis. That's the last 2 days. And so another ESPN personality coming up at 11 o'clock here today. So your chance to get qualified for that awesome trip. Okay, we are still trying to – get a hold of Richard Deitch, who is in Toronto, which is interesting because we had a good conversation with PK yesterday about Toronto and Drake being from Toronto. Of course, Drake was at Bridgestone Arena the night before, sold-out show, and got to hang with Drake after the show. But two Toronto guys, and that's where Richard resides now.
Super cool city. It is a huge city. Both of them pointed out the same thing. It's the fourth biggest city in North America, Toronto.
Yeah, I was just there about a year and a half ago. It's massive. Big.
It is massive. We went to see a movie in Toronto, and it was prior to the premiere of Black Panther, but they were having a special showing, and they had a bunch of cast members from Black Panther there. I mean, like, they don't just go anywhere. Yeah. You know, I was like, wow. Those are the people. Those are the Black Panther. That's the cast.
With that being said, let's head up to Toronto. Richard Deitch from The Athletic is standing by. Richard, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
We're just doing a little reminiscing about Toronto before we made contact with you. Did you get a chance to see the interview conducted by Rachel Nichols with Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban?
I did.
And what did you think?
I thought it was, I thought it was expertly done by Rachel Nichols. It's been a long time since I've seen a professional sports owner look, I mean, I don't want to say look bad because it's kind of a, you know, I come from it in two ways. I appreciate that Cuban came on to face what he knew were going to be tough questions and questions really where he doesn't have a good answer, but he really looked awful. I mean, the one thing that Mark Cuban usually doesn't look is dumb, and Mark Cuban looked – maybe not dumb is not the right word. Mark Cuban looked ignorant, and that's not something Mark Cuban usually looks. And his ignorance about what was going on in his own organization was catastrophically high. You know, if I want to believe the best of Cuban, I'll believe it's ignorance. If I want to believe the worst, it was that he sort of was systematically set up a system which where sexual harassment – and worse was allowed towards women. I think he has taken honest steps to try to correct that, but he also took those honest steps because of the Sports Illustrated story and because the story was out there. But as a general sort of interview, that was a clinic, and that, you know, that's one I would show in journalism school.
I agree, 100%.
You know, it's helped, though. It is helped, and this is one thing. This is not to take anything away from Rachel's work. It's helped that Rachel has a relationship with Mark Hughes.
Sure.
And, you know, having – there are places you can go with a subject when the news is not good, when you have a relationship with them, because it's not going to be overtly confrontational the way a lot of interviews can be if you don't know the subject. So she's helped by the fact that she's been in the league, obviously helped by the fact that she's got a good reputation. And, you know, Cuban made the decision to be on her show, which I think was interesting as sort of another subplot to this. But yeah, I mean, that was an absolute clinic in terms of how to do an investigation. By the way, I will say this, while I think, and I have written that I think ESPN has been overtly favorable to Urban Meyer going way back to his days of being an ESPN employee, I thought Tom Rinaldi's interview with Urban Meyer was excellent as well. Direct questions, great follow-ups, incredibly, incredibly good work by him too.
Yeah, an incredibly bad interview yet again by Urban Meyer, who again shows he seems tone deaf, and there's just no human element to him. He just comes off so unlikable, which I've been around him, and I've been telling people for years that listen to the show, he's unlikable anyway. So he's just being himself. But, you know, I think he's also tried to have this image that, you know, he's prim and proper, and he's not like that. And,
right.
And he is, yeah, like that, because I've been in behind-the-scenes settings with him, and quite honestly, he can be a real jerk. And I'm not surprised by any of this, but I would think even in these bad, bad times, he would show some human element, and he has still failed miserably at doing that.
The one thing I would say here, and this is where I am different than people in your area, and I don't say this as like somehow I'm more high-minded or better. It's just that having grown up in a place, New York, which doesn't really have any kind of college football tradition, I have always seen college football coaches and administrators through an incredibly cynical eye. I basically think that they are not to be trusted. They only care about one thing, and that's winning and revenue. And whenever I hear about, you know, we do things differently, we're about raising young men, we're about educating people, I think it's total BS. Now, are there coaches that do it right? No doubt. But I am a massive cynic here, and you have to prove that to me. Because I walk into that situation already thinking you're a BS artist. And I think Urban Meyer is a massive BS artist. As a football coach, I think he's brilliant, one of the best of all time. I do not believe a single word Urban Meyer says about family and making our program different. From back to Florida to his days at Ohio State, he's no different than any of these other guys who essentially do everything they can to win. He's actually fortunate because he's such a great coach that he's able to recruit the best of the best, which makes the line of winning versus losing that much more in your advantage. So I'm with you. I don't know Urban Meyer. I've never met him. I don't buy any of the front-facing stuff that he says. So it would not surprise me if, based on how your experience was with him, that he was like that. But, I mean, if nothing else, if there's anything that this sort of news cycle has done, I feel like it's at least shown the light from people who are reasonable and can make their own decisions about Urban Meyer. And at least if you see this guy on ESPN or somewhere else sort of sprouting about, you know, education and family atmosphere and we do things different. At least now I think there's enough people who just are like, you know what, don't even sell me down this river. Just go out and coach your games. I don't want to hear the larger narrative.
Yeah, well said. I got nothing to add. I wish I had a do-over for that moment in Nashville behind the scenes, because I would love to have a do-over, because he just looks down upon you like basically you're nothing to him. You're something on the bottom of his shoe, and I would have loved to have said, dude, you're just a football coach, okay? You're nothing. You're good at one thing. You're a one-trick pony. You win football games, and that's great. Good for you. But you're not doing anything to cure anything. You're not helping this world be a better place. You're a freaking football coach, okay? You're good at it. You're great at it. You win a lot of games. But stop looking at me. Stop looking down upon me, which I know he probably does that to everybody and has for years. But if I could do a do-over in that setting, that's what I would have said.
Well, it's just, here's the thing, and this is sort of a larger societal problem, and that is we put athletic figures on massive pedestals. And in certain markets, Columbus, for example, Ohio State is essentially the biggest cultural artifact there. And the Ohio State football coach is the most famous person in the state, probably the highest paid person in the state who's sort of not an independent or private business owner. And you, I think, have to have a certain – you have to be a certain type of person, I think, not to let that status and not to let that enabling make you a jerk, basically. You have to, I think, have come to that in a certain way, or else it can get the – to get the better of you. Now, again, this does happen in big cities too. You know, in a city like Toronto or a city like New York, you know, that could be the owner of the baseball team, or that could be like the star shortstop. But in Columbus, I mean, Urban Meyer is essentially a king. He is treated like one. And the only way you're not going to act like a king and look at people below you as subjects, I think, is if you have sort of your head grounded on that. You're, like you said, it's just football. You're not curing cancer. You're not solving important problems, but I just want to be sort of honest about this. I think that's very hard for human beings when you are basically praised and enabled and given riches and praise all the time. It's very hard probably not to believe that. In the same way, you see a lot of young Hollywood actors and actresses in their 20s, they lose it because they just cannot handle that kind of success, fame, adulation. And I think in certain parts of this country, particularly the parts of the country where the college football team is the biggest thing in town, I think that's what happens to these guys. So Urban's not alone on this. I mean, you know, I watch a lot of press conferences, and whether it's a Jimbo Fisher type or whether it's Urban or Saban, it's like God lecturing from the lantern, from the lectern. And it's, you know, I at this point, I kind of find it amusing because I don't buy any of this BS. But I think these guys really believe like they're the sort of, you know, the king and the emperor of that town. And the reality is they are. So I'm not surprised. I'm not condoning the behavior. It just doesn't surprise me.
Richard Deitch is with us from The Athletic, the media circus. Richard, you had a pretty good analysis with a couple of your colleagues at The Athletic about the NFL viewership over 2 weeks. And one thing that jumped out at me is the viewership is about the same amount of people, but they're not watching for as long. Is that a fair assessment? And the ratings are basically flat from last year to this year.
Correct. Yeah, that's not me. That's Anthony Krupe, who's of Ad Age. I certainly recommend him if you ever guys want a real sports TV ratings expert. I mean, this is a guy who basically deals in that every minute of his day, not me. And yeah, that's exactly correct. It's the numbers, the unique like people watching the NFL. Not really significantly dropped. What's sort of dropped is the amount of time they've watched the NFL. And admittedly, what has dropped, and we've talked about this in your show many times, is there are less people just sort of watching primetime TV. There are less people watching cable. So, you know, compared to 10 years ago. So in that sense, the numbers are going to be down. What's interesting now to watch for NFL viewership is the first 2 weeks of the year have been pretty, generally speaking, flat. If you're down 1 or 2%, in today's universe, that's flat, and that's a win. Big win, I actually would argue, for the NFL. So the question is going to be is what's now going to happen for the rest of the year? And if you're into this stuff, and admittedly it's kind of sports media nerdy stuff, watch the Thursday night football viewership, because Fox worked with the NFL to get essentially the best schedule in the history of Thursday night football. And so that number is going to be really, really important for the entire league. Because some of the games that are on Thursday Night Football would normally be at the 4:25 p.m. Sunday slot, which is the best viewership spot on television, regardless of programming. So that's a number to watch now, is to see if that Fox can increase Thursday Night Football viewership from what NBC and CBS had. And that should tell us, I think, a little bit about what the NFL ratings will be heading down in the season. And then lastly, and this is just the reality, this is why a lot of the Kaepernick conversation, all that stuff, ultimately turns out to be a lot of nonsense sometimes. The league's in a better place with quarterbacks at the moment. Pat Mahomes, Sam Darnold, Jared Goff looks like he's going to be a pretty legit quarterback. If Baker Mayfield ever plays, that makes Cleveland a more interesting team nationally. So the league looks like they're in a pretty good position heading forward for quarterbacks, especially some of these young guys pan out. And that's how the league has always marketed its game. So the NFL could be in I don't think we're going to see ratings like they were in 2006, but if some of these guys could pan out to be you know, Aaron Rodgers or, like, forget about Aaron Rodgers, but, like, quarterbacks that you can market nationally, meaning if I live in Tennessee, I'm interested in seeing this guy on the Chargers because he happens to be great. The NFL is going to be in a much better place in a couple of years. That's one thing that has been troubling for them over the last 2 or 3 years, in my opinion, is just with Peyton Manning retiring, the dearth of star quarterbacks that you can market to out of market cities. And so that's one to watch. And if you're the NFL, you know, you root for like guys like Patrick Mahomes to become big stars.
And finally, you caught up with Sarah Walsh, and a lot of us got to know her when she was at the ABC affiliate here and saw her rise up. She got caught in the crosshairs of that whole ESPN purge a couple years ago, so she's back on the air coming up this weekend.
Yeah, Sarah Walsh, by the way, is I really like her, and she's super honest, and she honestly could not go. She went basically 12-15% of what she, I think, would really like to talk about with me, but she's still under contract with ESPN, interestingly enough, through 2020. So she's pretty limited in terms of what she could say, in order not to ruffle's the wrong word, but in order not to, like, have ESPN lawyers basically get all over her. But she is, she worked out a deal where she is able to work this weekend. And she's working with Fox doing the Falcons-Saints game, Sam Rose and Chris Carter on that call. And it's the first time she's worked since January 2017. She went on maternity leave then. And then in what I think was one of the crappier things ESPN has done to an employee, they laid Sarah Walsh off while she was still on maternity leave. They also did it. She flew up with her babies, twins, to come up to Connecticut thinking that she was going to be on the schedule the following week to work SportsCenter, and they laid her off after she took her whole family and moved up from Florida to Connecticut. So they didn't even do the service of letting her know before she made that move, and I have twins, that is not a fun thing to do, traveling with young babies. So they didn't even let her know that she was going to be laid off before she made that trip to Connecticut. So, I mean, I was going to be blunt. They did her bad. Even if you were going to lay her off, I feel like somebody should have been more thoughtful and just, you know, sort of not had her go through that, particularly because whether you thought her work was good or not, I happen to, she was a good employee. She did, you know, she made you look good. She never embarrassed you away from the camera. And I feel like I'm just going to be blunt. They did her bad. And so I'm very happy for her to be back on the air. And I hope she has a good experience. And I hope Fox likes her work and continues with her, because I think she's an honest broker.
As are we. She lives here. I mean, she's got her start
we're
here.
We're big fans. Yeah.
We got to know her when she was doing local television here. So, now they've been here. So, definitely rooting for her. That was great to see that you put that out there. And certainly we'll pay a little bit closer attention. Was it the Saints and Falcons game, you said?
Saints-Falcons. Yeah, I put that out there, trust me. That'll cost me in the next couple of weeks where I'm not going to get something from ESPN. But that's okay. I'm over the border here in Canada. It can't really do much to me.
That's part of it, right? I'm sure that's not going to be the first time that's happened.
No. I mean, in a way, for someone in my position, it's, to be very honest, it's not a bad thing to have the networks that cover occasionally be pissed at you, because it lets them know that you don't work for them. So it's actually, I see it as a bonus, but, you know, there's going to be some other media reporters who are going to get a pretty good, pretty nice latte, as we say in the business, that ESPN is going to deliver them, and that's not going to be me in the next couple of weeks.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. Richard, have a great weekend. We'll do it again next week.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Richard Deitch, you can find his work at The Athletic. Always good to catch up with him. We'll come back with more of Darren and Donick next. We'll learn a little bit more about the Titans' opponent to kick off the second hour of the program. We'll go down to Jacksonville. It's going to be an interesting game at noon on Sunday. We'll have that, of course, part of our pick six tomorrow at 1 o'clock. But we'll learn who's hurt, who's not going to play, what's the significance of losing your left tackle. We'll get into all that stuff coming up at 11 o'clock. Also, P.K. Subban at 11:30. Speaking of that, I was looking at the ratings. Mark Benda from News Channel 5 puts them out every week. He has for years and years and years, as long as I can remember. And it is interesting, early on this year, what has jumped out at me is how the NFL games continue to be the highest rated programming, sports programming in this market, week in and week out. And when I watch these games, and I've been watching them, there are times, there have been very few games that have really sucked me in. And I realize college has got a lot more. I mean, we've got now, what, 130 Division I programs, something like that. So there's a lot more to choose from. And so Saturday morning starting at 11 o'clock all the way until well past midnight, I mean, you just get loads of college football games, as much as you can handle for over 12 hours. And so I guess with more games, more sampling, you can find more things to suck you in. Now, college has issues too. I mean, you're going to get an Alabama-Ole Miss game where it's like snooze city. Didn't take long.
And yet there were big ratings for that game.
Well, yeah, because that's a big fan base.
Yeah, but you would think some people would have had enough.
Oh, no, no, no.
At the half of that
game. I told you, you weren't here on Tuesday. Joe Rexroad was sitting in for you, and I said, you know, on paper, it looked like a good idea. The father-in-law invited us over for a cookout Saturday night and to watch the Alabama-Ole Miss game, and there were some other folks, my wife's aunt, and everything. They were in town from Tuscaloosa. I was like, okay, that's cool. We'll all go over there. Well, the problem is they are diehard Alabama. I mean diehard. And guess what? When I was going, boy, that Ohio State-TCU game's pretty close. Wow, oh, Texas and USC are going back and forth, at least early on. Those were hints of, hey, maybe we should just change the channel because this one's way gone. Oh, no. We had to watch it all the way until the end. 62-7. Until the coaches did the handshake. Wow. That's when we flipped channels.
Ohio State TCU, this is from Richard's article in The Athletic, averaged 7.32 million viewers in its ABC's most watched regular season game since last year's Oklahoma-Ohio State game on September 9th. So it was a really good rating. And the third highest viewership was the Alabama-Ole Miss game. 4.109 million watched that game despite the blowout.
The first college football game to register or to get the highest ratings in this market was LSU-Auburn.
That was the second highest national.
9.1 rating. Then Ohio State-TCU, a 7.8 rating. So that was 4 and 5. The top three were NFL games.
Where was Vanderbilt-Notre Dame?
Vanderbilt-Notre Dame was 6th. Okay, right after Ohio State TCU at 7.3, and that's good. But it was on NBC, so yeah. You expect a good rating. Vanderbilt at Notre Dame, a good game all the way to the end, and they got a good rating, 7.3.
Nationally, Notre Dame-Vanderbilt averaged 2.108 million. So there's the argument to play Notre Dame. What are you doing playing Notre Dame? Why not? And I've been one of those guys, but that is the spotlight you get. So they had...
They averaged
2.1 million viewers throughout the game, so that's good eyeballs on your program.
This is what we talked about on Tuesday when you were out, when you were coming back from L.A. If you win, this is why I'm in favor of these games, which you have poo-pooed for years, and we've gone back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
If Vanderbilt wins this game, think about the narrative this week. Not locally. Forget locally. The narrative nationally would have been, did you see Vanderbilt go in and beat Notre Dame? People will be talking about Derek Mason and the Commodores all week nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it will be no-brainer for sure. But think about that. I get it. They didn't win. But if Lipscomb pulls that in and they got first and goal with a minute to go, I believe they were going to win the game. Now, that's just my belief. I have no proof of it, never will have any proof. But I believe they go on and win the game. And think about the narrative going into this South Carolina game. Vanderbilt is ranked and on everybody's radar. They are the talk of college football right now. Right now.
Mm-hmm.
What is your issue with these games, Willie?
Well, remember, I watched Vanderbilt football from 1989 through 2008 without ever seeing them have a winning record or a bowl game.
Uh-huh.
So I believed in, before they put the rule in that you had to play a Power 5, which changes things, that I thought you should play 4 non-conference games that you should win.
Cupcakes.
Absolutely. When you have
dessert only.
Absolutely. You got to go to a bowl game. You have to have a winning record to start attracting better players, to have more good feeling in your program. So you have to help yourself with the schedule. So now I think the compromise, because the league has said, hey, we got to make sure we're, as a group, scheduling some tough non-conference games. So now you have to play a Power 5, and I think you should play three other games that you should win. You play eight really tough games in the SEC that you know are going to be tough every year.
Julian, this is a true story, and we've told this on the air before, but Willie remembers it well. We used to go back and forth. I mean, we used to have some really spirited debates when James Franklin was the coach. And, of course, I was saying, you know, stop playing. Not completely take out, but you got to have a meaningful game out of conference. I mean, and it was so much that it got the attention of James Franklin, because even though he said he didn't listen or didn't know what was going on,
he knew
everything. So we're going to tape an interview with him. The two of us go into his office, and we're sitting in there just chit-chatting before we do the interview. And he looks at me, and he's giving me you know what, because he's heard the conversations. He's with Willie completely, of course, because that's what he was. Look, he came in and canceled MTSU. That tells you the level. He took out the MTSU game. That's how much he wanted a cupcake. I mean, he wanted four games without a doubt.
He did not take away MTSU, I don't think.
Oh, yes, he did.
He took away Northwestern.
He took away Northwestern. He took away MTSU. Because at that point, MTSU had the upper hand in the series. They were winning those games when Bobby Johnson was the coach.
Bobby Johnson, remember the year that Vanderbilt took the $1 million to go play at Michigan? That was one that, yes, that was before James Franklin, and that set me off. I didn't like that at all.
But they got the money.
They got the money.
They did. To put towards academics, of course.
But see, that's what I'm talking about. This was before they ever went to a bowl game.
James Franklin is giving it to me.
The most famous one he did was he bagged a game with Northwestern, yes, and picked up something like UAB, and people went nuts. But he said, "Listen, if you're trying to win a national championship, then you should schedule a strength of schedule. There's a reward for strength of schedule. When you're building a program that hasn't won, there's no reward for strength of schedule." You have to win games.
And I understand that. And I told him, Coach, I get it. I understand your perspective. But if you're going to play Presbyterian, the Harlem Globetrotters, Statue of Liberty, and Cuyahoga Community College for your four non-conference games, that's fine. And you're going to win all four, but don't expect me to talk about you. I'm not going to go to the game. I don't care about those games. Just know that I will say nothing about those four cupcake games. If you play and beat the Harlem Globetrotters, good for you. I'm not talking about it. And we laughed about it, and we had a good – clearly I knew what his objective was, and that was what our debates were about for years.
Yeah, okay. Now I understand. Well, no, yeah, when you first get to a program and you're trying to build, yeah, you should play games so you can win. But eventually you got to start playing teams at a non-conference.
Why?
Well, because if you get to, when your program's young and trying to establish a culture, yeah, you want to win as much as possible because obviously you want to keep your job. But once you actually have upperclassmen, older players, and you're achieving more than just getting to six wins, then yeah, maybe you should try and see just how far you've gotten by playing a team from a power conference.
And he felt that way. I mean, he eventually scheduled these games that have just been played where they went to MTSU and they went to Western Kentucky. He put those on the schedule because he felt like by that time the program should be in position to win those games, which they did.
We'll come back, and the top three sports programs were NFL games. We're going to discuss why on the other side to wrap up the first hour of Darren and Donick. That's next. Let's find out who's paying attention to the show on this Thursday morning. Since it's a family four-pack, we'll do caller number four. Family four-pack to see MTSU and Florida Atlantic. That'll be next Saturday, which is September 29th, at Floyd Stadium down in Murfreesboro. So family four-pack, caller four, 737-1025, 615.
This is Floyd Stadium. This is Florida Atlantic.
737-1025. The Lane Train coming to Murfreesboro. Coming to Murfreesboro. The Lane Train is playing UCF this Friday. and that'll be in Orlando, and they're a 2-touchdown underdog. That's how good UCF is.
Tell me somebody that wouldn't want to go see the Blue Raiders put it on Lane Kiffin. Like, who doesn't like to see Lane Kiffin get smoked?
I don't know.
I mean, that would be fun.
I agree. So let's, like I said, let's see who's paying attention. Caller 4-737-1025. Now, I said the top three shows were NFL shows, according to Sports Bend and News Channel 5, okay? And one of them, the third one, was the Giants-Cowboys game Sunday night. And I'm like, how could that have done so well? I mean, I thought it was a deathly dull game. And I guess the question I have is, why? Why have the NFL games been so highly rated here when I'm trying to find some good – it was the Titans-Texans, duh, number one. Then Patriots-Jags, I get it. But really, it wasn't a compelling game because I thought the Jags controlled the game. But the Patriots, I guess, are always in it. You never count them out. And then Giants-Cowboys, that was the top three sports programming games in this market last week. And then came the college games that we talked about.
I think the Cowboys, number one, it's the Cowboys. There's a lot of Cowboy fans. And I think there's excitement at the beginning of the season. But one thing you would say...
But if you're just breaking down that, I mean, if you're just watching that game, I thought it would... I gave up on it. I was like, man, this Eli, the Giants offensive line sucks. I'm out of here. I'm done.
You just got done talking about your anecdote with Alabama. People love to watch Alabama do well, who are Alabama fans. People love to see the Cowboys do well, who are Cowboys fans. There's a lot of Cowboys fans still.
Yeah.
And it's haven't had a lot of success. I mean, last year they didn't have very much success. I think there's excitement that maybe they're better.
It was interesting. We had Richard Deitch on at 10:15 from The Athletic, but he wrote there was an article about the NFL ratings.
Yeah, we talked about it with Richard some. They're flat from last year to this year, which
actually is a positive, right?
Oh,
because they've been going the wrong way for years.
He talked about that as a very big positive. And the issues, when you really break down the numbers, are getting people to watch longer because the same amount of people are watching that have been watching years before, but they're just not watching as long. And the fragmentation, all of the shows that you've got now, all the options you have, are definitely a factor in that. But I think what the conclusion they came to in their analysis was that the narrative of the protests and the Colin Kaepernick Nike thing that was going to have this really bad effect has really not materialized at all. It's been sort of overblown, especially if you're just comparing last year to this year, because the Kaepernick thing is new this year. It hasn't had a negative effect. But the issue that they're trying to get is diluting games with the Thursday night game. They're very curious to see where it goes from here with now Fox taking over the Thursday night game, and they do have some good matchups early. Will that be a positive or a negative? Their theory is that diluting the schedule does have people watching less, watching for not as long. But the same amount of people are watching football, and the ratings for everybody's local team, the regional broadcasts, have been very good. It's the primetime games that have not been as good nationally. Now, you just got done talking about the locally, where the ratings have been pretty good around here.
No, they've been great. I mean, we talked about West Virginia and Tennessee playing on CBS to kick off their season where it counted, and they had lesser ratings in this market than the Titans-Vikings Thursday night preseason game 4 with no starters. And yeah. I was blown away by that. And
that
I'm just wondering, why are these NFL – I mean – the Titans, like I said, duh. I mean, I get it. They had a 19.6 rating. I mean, that's where they've been. They've been somewhere, depending on how the season's going, somewhere between 16 and 19 pretty consistently. If they're doing well or it's an intriguing game, it's going to be pushing 20. If things are getting bad or it's a lesser game, it's going to be around 16. So that I expect. But Patriots, Jags, a 15-2. Giants, Cowboys, a 12-6 rating. And the best college game on CBS – on a national stage, was a 9.1.
Hmm. What was the Titans game again?
19.6.
Pretty good rating. And
So why are the NFL games, and by the way, it's been this way since the NFL started the regular season. They are dominating the ratings in this market over any college football game.
Well, wait a minute. Colin Cowherd told us this was a college town.
Yeah, well, okay. Clearly it's not.
Well, I think I said that.
Yeah. No, I know. But, I mean, that there's that big – right now it's showing there's a gap. I mean, there's a real gap between the NFL and college in this market. Which, I mean, so what's the best – is it people – we know the numbers. People are moving – are they moving here from pro cities, pro markets? There's more interest in the pro product? Why is that? I have no idea. I've been watching this stuff, as you know, for years, and I don't remember it being this kind of a gap where the best college football game can't hang with just under the Titans game, right? I mean, you know the Titans are going to be number one, but these other games, they're not going to beat the best college game in this market.
I don't remember the numbers specifically. I'd love to see Mark Binda's comparison to, you know, pick some years where Tennessee was in contention for a national title, how that would have.
I think that is a big part of it. Tennessee's been down for so long. I mean, for a decade, they haven't been a real contender.
And I don't pretend to know what the ratings were 5 years ago compared to the NFL games for the CBS afternoon game. I'd like to see a study there.
Let me ask you
I
something.
Can't tell. I don't know the answer to the question.
Where's Tennessee, Florida come in this week? Let's go on and project for next week when the ratings, when Mark Bendis sends us out, where's Tennessee, Florida going
to
rank?
I'd like to know. I don't know the reference of what it was back in the day in the 90s when they were, you know, in the top five in the country.
Here's something for you. It's on ESPN.
Yeah, and that'll hurt it. Obviously, it's on ESPN.
And not CBS.
Yeah.
2:30 game.
It's a 6 o'clock Saturday night game.
That's reserved for good teams like Alabama.
So I mean that'll play a factor, and the NFL games are all on, you know.
So clearly it'll be down
Fox or CBS.
Nationally, it won't even be close to what it was. But locally is the question.
Doug Conadoria?
Conadoria.
Conadoria? Congratulations, Doug. You were caller 4. Good job by you. Bad job me reading your name. But have fun at MTSU and Florida Atlantic next Saturday. We'll head down to Jacksonville to kick off the second hour. That's next.